The good, the bad, and the alternative. By Madame Melon Meow and Sarcastic Celery. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Chapter 14. Coming Home. Hours in the past, but not many. Rose. Rose gripped the wall of the truck bed for dear life. Somehow her concerns over the dueling statistical versus paranormal explanations of her previous dice throws had decreased in priority next to Dave's downtown driving capabilities. The shackle on her wrist jolted her arm every time he took a turn too sharp or failed to see a speed bump, and she felt the black pit of resentment she'd already been harboring against the hunter deepen. For a miraculous few minutes, they hit a straight road with an array of stoplights, allowing her a brief reprieve from suffering the same experience Pears went through while being transported in a crate. Then Dave hit a half-foot-deep pothole full-on. Rose flew from the ridged floor of the truck bed, first cracking the top of her head against the roof, then the side of her face against the tinted window, then her ass back onto the hard plastic. Rose was hardly the most Callipygian, and the impact rammed directly into the bone. Ugh! Rose grabbed the top of her head, where she felt a lump forming. Fantastic. She hoped she wasn't going to be meeting anyone she cared to impress. She still had no idea where they'd be going, aside from some hastened discussion back at the body dump regarding treatment and identification. But the passing buildings became more and more familiar as they traversed the city. The only arcade open in Texas rushed past. Kanaya had once convinced Rose to go, despite her own lack of interest in video games and Rose's interest in video games favoring the more mechanically or narratively complex than House of the Dead 4. She remembered Kanaya's smile and the flashing colors of the cabinets. For a brief moment, she forgot about the hunt for magic, her missing friend, the empty glasses. It was one of the best nights of Rose's life. She looked through the window to the back seat, through her reflection at the vague shape of Kanaya, unmoving. She was under whatever grip that vampire Vriska inflicted on her mind. Rose was stricken by a sudden thought that ran a chill up her spine. Was Vriska manipulating Kanaya's thoughts? The vampire clearly had some kind of control over Kanaya's physical reactions, but what about her mental state? Rose had hardly done as much research into the innate magics of the alternative peoples once learning such abilities would be perpetually out of her grasp. Had she read something regarding emotional manipulation? Surely not. She would have remembered something like that. Or would she? Rose rapped on the glass behind the hunter's head 3 times. He didn't so much as flinch. John's head turned, though, and he said something to the hunter which Rose couldn't make out. The hunter turned his head slightly towards John and responded, clearly in the negative. John looked back at Rose and offered an apologetic smile that looked more like a grimace. She slapped the window one last time in protest, like she could reach through and smack the back of the hunter's head. As she stared at her hand against the tinted glass, she looked at Kanaya. Though she knew she couldn't hear it, Rose whispered, "I love you. I'm sorry." She felt warmth flooding to her eyes again and blinked it away, watching the form of her dead, now alive, Kanaya, shift ever so slightly in her seat. Rose slumped down again, her back to the window. She clutched her knees to her chest and morosely watched the buildings continue to pass by, growing more and more familiar. "Wait a minute," Rose said under her breath. She pressed her face to the side of the truck cap to get a look at the next street sign. Louisiana Street. This was the road the hotel was on. Rose pressed her fists against her eyes in a fruitless attempt at warding off the headache that was coming on. Of course they would be going to her mother. Just when she thought her day couldn't degenerate further. Rose took a deep breath. More than anything, she wanted to let it out in a scream, but she controlled the exhale, feeling the air whistle between her teeth. How would she approach this situation? She could imagine her mother standing at the door to the hotel. If the hunter hadn't summoned her from an all-nighter of martinis and cosmopolitans, she would have woken up early from a drunken slumber. Rose's mother was one of those people that claimed not to get hangovers. And while that may have been true at one point, a point when she drank less than 3 handles a night, Rose knew all about the Advil, Pedialytes, and disappearing loaves of bread. No, her mother would be nursing some kind of caffeine to fight off the grogginess. Her mother would be tactfully ignoring her under the pretense of urgent care for the situation, a convenient excuse to continue with the absenteeism she'd been cultivating all throughout Rose's search for the last 3 years. Her mother would be as chipper and mom as she could muster for Rose's friends, a transparent attempt to undercut anything Rose had told them about her. A gentle tap in the back of Rose's mind from the small part of her that wasn't overcome with the brewing storm of resentment reminded her that Mom would be responsible for the verdict on Kanaya's well-being. Rose felt petulant at that part of herself, given its truthfulness, so be it. Rose had played the polite girl before. The hunter opened the trunk to a Rose sitting cross-legged, face impassive, duffel bag repacked. Mostly. He held the towel-swaddled tablet casually in his left hand. In his right, he held a jingling set of handcuff keys. "Before you ask, I sent the others ahead of us. Are you going to come along without kicking up a fuss? Or am I going to have to drag you in cuffs while your neighbors watch?" He spoke with an even, level tone, offering each option as much weight as one would a menu option at a particularly cheap restaurant. Like it didn't matter either way. Rose momentarily pondered the merits of making a scene, of shouting, of fighting, of begging early rising onlookers to help her. She knew the fantasy for the foolishness that it was, and discarded it with a sigh. She had taken a dark satisfaction with scaring her neighbors these past few years. It was her way of making sure they didn't interfere, didn't raise a fuss about her lack of supervision or the company she kept. She doubted they would wish to intercede on her behalf, especially given the identity of the man guarding her. "I can play nice," she held out her wrist expectantly, and the hunter leaned forward to free the other end from the truck itself. Rose quickly scrambled from the pickup, eager to stretch her legs after hours of confinement. As she watched him close the doors of the truck bed and truck cap, she continued speaking. "I hope you don't expect my darling mother to play hostess for you. I'm afraid the penthouse fridge is stocked for a mixologist, not a tea cake nor finger sandwich in sight." The man's brow furrowed for a moment, a flicker of surprise, distress, unease. She wasn't quite sure, dashing across his features, then disappearing into that artificial smoothness of non-expression that made her eyelid twitch. "We're here because she's an expert at what she does, not because of her social skills. You're lucky she's attached to you. Makes what happens next a little bit easier. Let's go." Still cradling that damning artifact, he gestured towards the hotel door. Rose reluctantly stepped past him, feeling his eyes boring into the back of her skull as she walked inside. As she suspected, the lobby was near empty, aside from the barely awake desk clerk and the bored security guard. Neither acknowledged the duo as they made their way to the elevator. Stepping inside the elevator, Rose reached for the penthouse button, only to find the gloved hand of the hunter brushing past her, blocking her. "Going down, not up," he informed her tersely, hand reaching for the left of the panel. His fingers grazed against a tiny marking, causing a section of wall to spring open. Rose could only watch in mute shock as he entered a passcode. Angling his body to prevent her making note of the digits, and pressed a B button which glowed her mother's signature pink. "How long has this been here?" The question slipped free like an errant thought, a dangerous exposure of her apparent lack of composure.
"As far as I understand it, you folks moved in here because of the basement accommodations," he muttered, shifting slightly as he cradled the whalebone. She could sense his judgment, knew he had to be wondering how she'd missed this, how she hadn't noticed the presence of yet another hidden laboratory near her home. The elevator rattled to a stop, and he placed his hand on her shoulder as the doors slid open. They were in a nondescript hallway,
with those familiar green tiles that made her grit her teeth in irritation. Across from them was an observation window, through which a large room was visible. It appeared her friends were all seated against the wall, while her mother fluttered around the room, shifting equipment and machines that straddled the large, intricate circle design carved into the floor. Hand still clamped onto her shoulder, he steered her into the room, immediately angling for the chair furthest from the others. Rose, busy trying and failing to make eye contact with a vacant-eyed Kanaya, barely seemed to notice as she was guided to sit, then had the other end of the handcuff secured to the armrest of the chair. All she could think about was the transformation that had come over Kanaya. The moment the vampire's powers had clamped down on her. The fact that Vriska caught her eye and sneered each time she angled her gaze towards her girlfriend, it did not inspire confidence that Kanaya was in safe hands. The click-clack of her mother's heels signaled her approach, and Rose reluctantly looked over. Her mother's two bright eyes slid right past her, instead focusing on the hunter standing beside her. "Broderick, you could have given me a bit more warning than this," she said snippily, gesturing at Rose, then the rest of the teenagers. Before he could respond, her attention went to Kanaya. "Get her on the observation table. Then everyone non-essential needs to stay here out of my way." As soon as she said this, Vriska shot up from her chair, nostrils flaring, and snatched her seat up, striding inside the circle to deposit it next to one of the machines that had made the cut. From her new perch, she locked eyes with Kanaya, and Rose felt darkness swirling within her as she watched the vampire's lips move in a whisper. John stood, helping Kanaya from her chair, and Rose could do nothing as her love shuffled forward, looking like a lost child in her older brother's clothes, carefully guided to the sterile surface of the observation table. Once deposited, John quickly returned, taking the seat next to Rose. "Broderick, would you please give me some more details on what exactly I'm dealing with here? And what on earth is that?" Infuriatingly, her mother had yet to spare her a glance, too busy playing doctor for anything else. She hadn't even acknowledged the handcuffs on her daughter, too busy strangling the can of her energy drink until the bright pink aluminum was twisted beyond drinkability. Rose's resentment was beginning to fester. "The kids got wrapped up in witchcraft, used this artifact to summon something. Trying to talk to Jade, apparently. Kanaya was fatally wounded. That was yesterday at dawn. At dusk, she got back up again." Rose watched her mother, watched her twitch as Jade's name was spoken, listened to her nonchalant hmm as Kanaya's resurrection was referenced. "She was strong, fast, angry, and hungry. She had massive blade-like fangs. She was covered in her own blood, both red and green. I watched her throw John through a tree. While still lacking most of her torso, she broke my blade into pieces. If it wasn't for John's own miraculous recovery, allowing him to employ an unnatural strength of his own, and for Vriska doing the mind vampire magic, she would have eaten us." He spoke in a clipped tone, each sentence a compact burst of sound. "She's expressed several vampire-like tendencies. Aside from the fangs and blood color, according to Vriska, her thoughts have been filled with overwhelming hunger for our blood, human or otherwise."
"Otherwise?" Rose's mother asked, growing more intrigued with each word the hunter produced. The hunter, to his credit, frowned in distaste at the fascination in her tone.
"Yes. She seemed to see Vriska as much of a viable food source as the rest of us, including Egbert, which might be relevant depending on the results of your testing," he added.
"She's nauseous because you smell like rubbing alcohol, if that helps,"
Vriska called over with a cruel twist in her voice.
"Is that so?"
her mother said ambiguously, chewing on her thumbnail, her eyes still casually preventing themselves from landing on Rose. Rose did not like it. She did not like the fact that her mother was pretending she did not exist. She did not like that she cared if her mother acknowledged her or not. Before she could say anything, her mother turned, the tail of her lab coat swishing as she walked off.
"Let's see just what you have going on under the hood, Kanaya,"
she said with the mannerisms of a pediatrician. The hunter, satisfied Rose was once again locked in place, walked over to the chair two seats over from where Rose sat and plopped himself down, arms crossed. The empty seat between the rest of them and Rose clearly indicated where the hunter thought the blame belonged. John, Dave, Kanaya, she'd used them like tools. If it came to it, she would take upon herself sole responsibility for the ritual, and whatever punishment the hunters meted out, of that she was certain.
Without a word, Dave got up from his seat and fell into the chair next to Rose, making an exaggerated noise of exhaust. Fuck, man. I don't know about you, but these slatty-ass metal chairs are not making it easy to conk out. Rose couldn't help a small smile, in large part due to the pissy expression that came across the hunter's face when Dave moved. I insist you try sitting, handcuffed, in an unpadded truck bed for a day straight before passing such judgment on these ergonomic steel chairs, Rose replied, bitters creeping into her voice.
Yeah, shit. Well, your bony ass, forget it.
He breathed a laugh that didn't have his heart in it. Your stellar piloting of the vehicle makes such a feat impossible, Rose muttered. She shouldn't be taking her frustrations out on Dave, she knew that. But it was undeniable that everyone in the room had made it onto her ever-lengthening shit list. And surely she was on theirs. She knew it by the averted gazes, by the lack of protest at her incarceration in the trunk, by the outright hostility. At least Vriska had made it clear and tried to kill her. Rose saw John get up and enter the circle where Kanaya and Vriska already sat. Of course they would need his supernatural strength in case things went awry. Rose's foot began tapping too quickly to be an idle motion. They were all speaking quite quietly. Her mother, Vriska, Kanaya, Manasa Balak. Rose looked around the room at all the green paneling. The voices ought to have carried further soundproofing. She wasn't certain the purposes of such a feature. Rose didn't see animal cages anywhere, at least not in this room. She could only guess how deeply the facility burrowed. Skynet could have built to the center of the Earth, should the company have chosen to. And her mother was a researcher for them. If the bunker in the Rocky Mountains was any indicator, she had access to vast reserves of company resources. And to do what? Clearly her mother had known about the alternative world prior to the catastrophe, but she only seemed interested in a scant few aspects of it. Jade and her capabilities, magics resulting from genetics, something Rose could hardly make use of as she was not an embryo, and dwarven liquor, which she had stowed in the furthest back of the lowest shelves of her stash. Rose recalled her pleas to her mother for assistance in her search for Jade those first few weeks in the bunker. First, the avoidance.
Oh, Rosie, I'm far too busy at the moment.
Then the excuses.
Mom is just a researcher, dear. You don't expect programmers to project websites from their mouths, do you?
Then the threats.
Rosie, this is not something you want, and you can't even get it either. Come help with the kittens instead.
It was only when they'd moved to Houston, and all her mother's files were flushed from their secure storage to a hotel room, that Rose had the chance to dig through them herself, to learn what her mother knew about Jade. But if there was a lab here this entire time, why were the files?
Fine by me.
Rose jolted at Vriska's exclamation, looking up at the circle. And Kanaya launched at her mother, mouth slavering, razor-sharp teeth bared, much too fast for her mother to react. John wasn't fast enough either. Whatever had propelled him to save Rose didn't seem as instinctual for Rose's mother. A million emotions regarding her mother flooded Rose, then crashed into one. Fear. Fear of losing her mom. Rose was far too slow, and her shackle kept her in place, right beside the unmoving hunter. Rose could only watch as Kanaya's hands, flexed like claws, began closing towards her mom's throat. Rose imagined another swath of blood covering the floor. Another geometric circle hidden under crimson, more pieces in a body bag. And then... Rose's mom casually twisted her wrist, her arm hanging at her side, making her palm face Kanaya, index and middle finger extended. And Kanaya was blasted backwards like she'd touched a live wire, a shimmering pink field rising up both around her mother and following the arc of the circle in the floor. A magic field. Rose felt something bubble up in her, a strangled laugh. Rose was outside of herself. She had snapped. She knew it. Her mind became a flipbook of memories, lies, pain, fluttering through her psyche, whipped up into a hurricane. Her mother. Her mother had just used magic. Rose must have blacked out or dissociated, as the next thing she knew was Dave's elbow at her side. Can't believe you managed to fall asleep in these things, he said, shifting in discomfort on his chair. Almost done, that and I just thought you'd... He looked Rose in the eyes. You good? Rose felt her nostrils flare as she took in a shaky breath. She spoke, very controlled.
My mother uses magic.
Dave looked like a cornered rat. A protracted whisper quiet. Fuck. Escaped from between his teeth. We didn't, Christ, you look pissed. We didn't get around to telling you the plan, did we?
What was the plan, Dave? Pray tell.
Rose was powdering her molars with the force her jaw was clenching. Dave looked back at his brother, who was ignoring them. We came to see... He raised his hands in placation. The wizard. Rose's vitriolic exclamation of...
The fucking wizard!
Was lost underneath a sudden sound of discharging electricity and a concerning sound of suction. Rose whipped her head to the circle to see... No. Like a vision... Like a memory. Like a screenshot from a video call over 3 years ago, the cascade of night black hair, the shimmering neon green eyes, the wide, buck-toothed smile that carried Rose's search through hell and back. It was Jade. Confessions of a Wizard. Sunday, April 29th, 2012. As Roxanne lit the pink candles one by one, the thin taper in her hand felt heavy. She was glad when she finished lighting them to blow out the taper and toss it into the nearby metal bin. It hit with the lightest tick among its brethren. Her eyes glazed across the altar, set up in the same way she always did. Among the minute community of wizards, there was vitriolic contention over the proper way to build an altar to the goddess. As many methods were argued as there were denominations of Christianity, at least. She liked to keep it simple. Candles of varying size but uniform color made a semicircle, cradling the rest of the altar like a votive. Her perfume vial of myrrh tinctures sat next to a shallow glass of water in the center. Ready for her ritual today. It was encompassed by a radial of stone and metal, a shard of obsidian, a nugget of bronze, likewise of stone, and a pebble of depleted uranium. Symbols were woven into the ritual mat this all sat on, the tria prima of alchemy, a cruciform, and, of course, most vitally, the symbol of projection, Pisces. It was an indicator of what the wizards worked within. The known impossibility to be triumphed over by the advancement of power, by the advancement of the goddess. Led to gold, free energy, hard light. Magic was indistinguishable from sufficiently advanced science, and so she held the domain over both. Roxanne sighed, walking across the metal floor of the bunker room to a small table. Yes, this was her office. A Spartan, locked room in a bomb shelter, but it was also one of the few places she could go to get some peace and quiet. Not just from the bustle of a city, such a far cry from her lovely, isolated New York manor, but also. She snatched up her extra spicy Bloody Mary, some hair of the dog for the headache she was working up. There wasn't enough left in it to justify a sip. She downed the rest of the glass, savoring the burn of the peppers and the liquor. She blew out a hot breath, and aggressively shrugged off her lab coat. Time to get this over with. She walked back over to the heavy oak table that held the altar and knelt before it. The bones of her knees dug into the floor. She breathed in, ensuring the components of the ritual were all present, the oil, the water, the flame, the stone.
Oh, goddess,
she began.
Your devotee entreats you.
She felt her eyes warm and a pink glow was cast across the altar. Olympus of magic, She who came first among the divine, I humble myself before you. She tapped out a drop of the perfume into the water and poured it over her head. The water was lukewarm, but still made her writhe in discomfort as she felt it bead down her hair and drip over her face and into her collar.
A mockery of baptism, intended to humiliate.
She opened her mouth to speak, lips curling in disgust as droplets of the perfumed water clung to her lips and befouled her tongue.
O God-eater, she whose flames are life and death itself, I burn myself in supplication.
Holding her left hand steady, she lowered it down over the altar, fingers splayed, until the tips just brushed the semicircle of candles, allowing each to be singed slightly before pulling away. The blistering pain was familiar but never comfortable.
O your illustrious candescence!
She grasped the shard of obsidian.
She who lights the darkness, I bleed myself as offering.
She drew a narrow cut across the top of her forearm. She remembered in her naive youth cutting horrible gashes across her flexible, nerve-filled palm just like in the movies.
Stupid.
She dripped the blood onto each of the metals in turn, before gently setting the obsidian back in its place. The air seemed to grow thick as the smell of blood wafted up in the heat of the candles.
Shame, pain, sacrifice.
This was the cost of wizardry. Anyone arrogant enough to bargain with her had to be prepared to be brought low, to be knocked to their knees to kowtow. To forever prove that they care not for the cost, even as they are beaten down, to forever squirm before her watchful eye.
My name is Dr. Harleen Roxanne Lalonde. My confession is thus.
She paused, trying to take a calming breath. She could feel her pulse beginning to race, her hands beginning to tremble. The effects of this ritual were cruelty incarnate. A customized mutilation that was dependent on the wizard. For Roxanne, confession felt like withdrawal.
My confession is thus,
she began once again, starting with that which would anger the goddess had she truly understood the implications.
I butchered today's operation on the macaque, killing a strong, healthy female. I have orphaned a youngling, her daughter. I did so with steady hands and a cold heart. This was no accident. I confessed to murder, murder spurred by my jealousy. I knew her neural pathways intimately, knew that if the operation was successful, she might be the first primate to possess inherent magic. She was a wonderful mother, patient, and kind. I could not allow her to wield magic with the ease of breathing, to continue raising her daughter without the suffering you subject me to. I will operate on the daughter instead. Let her in her grief be given this boon. She can use it to defend herself from the rest of the troop. We will see how quickly she learns to wield it as a weapon, rather than a tool. I will get one step closer to the ultimate sin, to suffering eternal. Thus, I confess.
Roxanne paused, feeling the effects of the confession increasing. Beads of sweat prickled at her temples, mixing with the perfume clinging to her skin and stinging her eyes as it trickled down. She could not wipe it away. She was not permitted to do so, not until the confession was complete. And hers was far from complete. She could feel dark satisfaction creeping into her, a sinister coldness in her hand as if a scalpel rested there. Her memories of the operation made real by the confession, the sweat dripping from her fingertips turned hot and tacky, coloring crimson and gray as the memory of blood and brain matter took form before her eyes. Roxanne shuddered. It was time to continue before the soul of her victim manifested as a mocking ghost. She had enough of those to look forward to today. As she formulated her next confession, she felt a wave of grief and shame threaten to overwhelm her as fresh as the first day.
My confession is thus. The blood on my hands today means nothing to me, because the blood that should stain them would burn right through me.
I confess on this day, as I will continue to confess until what is left of me is consumed by flame. I was lazy. I was sloppy. I was obsessed with my magic, and it cost me my goddaughter. Jade Harleen Sassaker. Known to the world as Jade Harley, the moment Grant Sassaker retreated from the world of man and alternative alike. The moment he decided his child's life was worth more than the greed of her mother.
There was no comfort to be had in speaking these words again. No closure, no catharsis, nothing but another numbing wash of guilt and shame. It had truly been her fault, and her fault alone for not saving Jade. She felt sick, the nausea of the ritual clawing up her throat as the ghostly image of Jade, smiling widely at the security cameras, grinning and waving mere hours before her demise, rose up from the smoke.
Jade had been my secret, had been my responsibility. But I was afraid of the change that was coming. Not ready to raise two girls, to run a lab, to hide and protect and train Jade for what was to come. I was not prepared to tell her the truth. After years of parroting a dead man's lies.
Saliva pooled in her mouth, a thick coating that heralded the vomit that was to come. Her head was beginning to pound a painful tempo in step with her racing heart, and Jade's screams echoed in the room. Even as her imprint smiled and waved. Auditory hallucinations, or part of the ritual. She could never be sure. It made her feel panicky, made her want to bolt, but she feared moving now might bring the foulness of tomato and vodka back up her throat. Inwardly, she cursed her colleague, who had left the spicy mixture in the fridge, triggering her compulsions. Her stomach lurched violently. I wanted the easy way out. I wanted Grant to answer those questions, to defend those decisions, to... She choked, a hot burn of bile and spice and liquor forcing its way up and out, dribbling past her lips and down her mouth. It was either on her or on the altar. And there was really no choice at all. She forced herself to continue to talk past the pain of her stomach acid burning her tongue.
I wanted him to pick up the goddamn slack! To make sure a sloppy drunkard of a wizard wasn't the only one responsible for everything. I performed necromancy, attempted to conjure his ghost. I didn't realize, I didn't know, goddess, that you had placed him in a gilded cage. That you would notice an unworthy one tugging futilely against the bars.
She coughed up another splash of reflux.
Once again, I beg you forgive this wretched worm who ventured where she shouldn't have dared. Thus I confess.
She clasped her hands together and tucked her head. That ought to be it. That should have been all she needed. There were many other Sundays when this amount of groveling and bile was enough, but there was guilt. At the back of her mind, something the ritual gently cajoled out of her. The reason she had spent the last 3 days sleeping at her desk instead of the lovely queen size in her converted hotel suite.
Rose,
she whispered.
Oh, my baby Rosie, I'm so sorry.
The pain in her knees reminded her what she needed to do. This was not reflection. This was not family therapy. This was suffering.
My confession is thus, Rose, I have been lying to my daughter. I have been deceiving her at every turn and pulling wool over her eyes before she could even open them. I have kept her from you. I've driven off any other wizard from our city. In that city, I found any text, any fragment, any scrap with the notion of you upon it and secreted it away. I've made it impossible for my daughter to seek her friend as she desires to. Impossible to seek out you, but she knows. She knew if I knew something. And so I placed it before her. I allowed her to find the records. It would tell her there's no way Jade could have survived the catastrophe, but somehow she found open it. A clue
And now I must hide even myself from her. I can't even look at my own daughter, my little Rosie, in the eyes anymore.
Dizziness flooded her, and she nearly toppled over from her kneeling position. She caught herself, and the impact of her palm on the floor jarred her from fingertip to skull. She looked back up and saw her daughter standing in the smoke, towering over her, eyes glowering the same bright pink as hers, smiling as raw magic peeled from her in waves. Jade's screams had faded along with her image. In their place was Rose's joyful laughter. She wanted to stand up, to scream no, to set her foot down and cry anything but my daughter. But she could not move. She was prostrate. She had submitted. This is what it meant to be a wizard, to lose everything, to feel an obsidian blade scraping her meat out from the inside, as the goddess took and took until all that was left was empty skin supported by hollow bones. Even the marrow sucked free. I know that Jade is dead. I know that your punishment for my transgression was to worsen the blowback, to send me on a bender so debauched that I slept through not just the rest of Friday, but did not awaken until Monday was well and truly in progress. Your punishment was to ensure that the time to retrieve Jade before the meteors fell, that the window had closed, and her dog had taken her out of my hands. That instead I watched from a screen as Jade's plane fell from the sky. As her tracking chip stopped giving me biometric feedback, and Rose sat on the other side of the door screaming at me for locking her inside the bunker. She didn't even know I was watching her friend die. She had no idea who Jade was to me. She still has no idea. I will never tell her. Because I would have to tell her about you, and I refuse to do so. An act of blasphemy that should be my undoing, should unravel what little is left of my undeserving being. Thus I confess. Just like that, the figure of Rose reached down for the candles, lips twitching in amusement, as the flames raced up her eager fingertips, igniting her and destroying her in a sickening instant. The ritual no longer pulled at Roxanne's awareness, no longer searching for more. With ordinary spell work, with usual applications of magic and prayer and ritual, the candles would have been extinguished at the conclusion. A clear symbol that the goddess was no longer in the room, even in spiritual flame. The worst part of this whole charade? She wasn't even listening. The flames never indicated a watchful eternal eye among the embers, no matter how many candles burned. Roxanne dared not extinguish the wicks. The sprinkler system would trigger if there was a problem. She was sure of it. In the meantime, it was best to let them burn. I depart from your presence, O eternal flame. My confession is naught but embers. Roxanne slowly and painfully forced herself to her feet, waves of nausea nearly bending her double. She needed a stiff drink. And as she looked down at the vomit caking her, she decided she'd take that drink in the shower. Roxanne exited her office, lurching and stumbling entirely off balance. The door auto-locked behind her with a pneumatic hiss, hiding the mess from her colleagues, as she referred to her employees. 9 years, and she still couldn't get used to being their boss. Dr. Gupta, the veterinarian who tended to the lab animals' quality of life, was standing in the hallway, pacing, really. The young wraith stared at her, his arms wrapped protectively around a young macaque, cradling her like an infant. It was the orphan. And she snuggled against her human keeper, unaware of the disgust marring his features. The man was using his wraithcraft, a small, stolen use of free magic. He channeled it into a talent for sensing the emotional state of animals. and apparently had decided the mourning adolescent needed physical touch. "Prepare for surgery. We're operating on her today," Roxanne blurted out, clinging to the wall of her room, unable to hide herself. Her shame made her squirm as she curled in on herself, shaking and panting, trying not to hurl. The tremors were worsening. She needed a drink before the tremors turned into a seizure. "Are you in any state to be operating?" he demanded harshly, his words accusatory. She forced herself to make eye contact with him, to lock her burning, glowing pink eyes to his soft brown ones. "We have no choice. Our work is too important. We cannot allow another generation of wizards to pledge themselves to a life like this. Don't you agree?" She could feel the heat radiating off her body, the fever making her sweat even more. She needed a drink now. "You're in delirium tremens," he stated, not asking, just stating. "That was her price. You know that. Now prep the adolescent. I'll be there with steady hands in 15 minutes. That's an order, not a request." With that, she lurched away from the wall, her mind fixed on the gray goose in her bedroom. She'd make a vodka martini. That would fix it. Yes, Dr. Lalonde, I will see it done. He tightened his grip on his subject and headed for the operating room. Roxanne encountered no others on her path back to her bedroom, a small blessing. She'd already put on the display. She couldn't afford to be seen by anyone else. Her respectability couldn't. She hoped the others had left the lab already, making their long journeys home and leaving only Dr. Gupta to watch her degrade herself. She fell into her bedroom, stumbling over her feet, nearly crashing to the floor, gasping. She flung out her hands, catching herself. This was a bad one. She crawled to her bar, propriety be damned, and clawed her way up into the chair, feeling fear grip her, the seizure it was coming. She made her drink in a panicked daze. Even now, the compulsions guided her, demanding she do more than simply place the bottle to her lips. Grabbing a plastic martini glass, she slammed it onto the counter. Fumbling for the vermouth, hastily snatching the vodka, she poured both into the glass, not bothering to measure. The vodka bottle was nearly empty. She shoved it aside, scrambling for the olive jar, jamming her fingers in and scooping out two, plunking them into the drink without ceremony. Gasping, she brought the cup to her lips and downed half the glass in a single sip. Just like that, her shaking ceased. The heat receded. The pain in her head halted. The nausea disappeared. It was over. She wanted to laugh, or perhaps cry. But she had time for neither. She topped off her glass, a little extra vermouth, a splash of olive juice. She had a surgery to prep for. So she exited the room, hastening down the hallway to the bathroom. Roxanne was relieved to find a folded set of clean clothes and lab gear waiting inside and next to the sink, a bit of foresight on her part. She grabbed a towel, bringing it all into one of the shower stalls, placing her dry things on a little chair outside of the water's pathway. Yanking the water on, she stepped into the spray, just barely remembering to kick off her heels before she could slip and fall on her ass. It was cool. And she let it soak her through, rinsing myrrh and vomit from her skin and clothes alike. As the water washed over her, drumming a relaxing pattern into her head, she sipped her drink, staring at a patch of nothing on the wall. The water saturated her clothing, the cold sensation of it blooming across her covered body. Inch by inch, she savored it. The dousing chill pushed away all thoughts of fire and magic, if but for a moment. Her hair was pasted all across her face. She adjusted the shower head and leaned back against the wall, letting the water thump on her chest like a second heartbeat. She found her legs wobbling and allowed herself the mercy of giving in. She slid to the floor, water spraying off the wall over her head into a mist. She took another sip of her drink. It tasted diluted. She pulled the glass from her lips and examined it. She watched the errant droplets of the shower splash into the cocktail, like rain in a pond. Splash, splash, splash. It was surely raining in Houston. The atmospheric pressure changes had turned the already wet city into a true stew of climate. Rose would be out and about in it, looking for something that couldn't be found. She took another sip. The raw taste of the water somehow overpowered the burn of the liquor in a horrible way. She kept drinking.
Would it be worth it, Grant? Each human their own god, like you were.
It has to be, she slurred to herself. It has to be.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same authors, visit the AO3 pages of Madam Melon Meow and Sarcastic Celery. Constant Conquest by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at sangabrielvo.com. And there you can learn about other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.